From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Megan Mack. Our connection this hour was made last week on Lake Ontario, where Governor Andrew Cuomo and Attorney General Letitia James were out on a fishing trip. The governor and attorney general were promoting tourism in Oswego and lakeside communities that have been impacted by the high water levels and severe lake flooding. We heard from the governor's office this morning at WXXI News. They said he has some news to break today regarding those lake issues, and he asked to do it here on Connections, which is an honor for us. I know he also wants to discuss his Oswego trip. He joins us on the line now, Governor Cuomo. Welcome back to Connections.
Thanks. Good to be back, Megan. Maybe I was promoting tourism, but I was fishing first. I was just having fun.
Was it a successful trip?
It was a successful trip. We caught a few salmon. We brought a couple home. First, it was a beautiful day. And, you know, there's nothing that beats a beautiful day on Lake Ontario. And it really was a picture-perfect day. And it was, I was glad because the Attorney General is not, let's say, an avid boater or an avid fisher person. So the lake was calm and it was beautiful and it was nice. And the captain was really great, a captain named Kevin Keller. And we caught fish, which always makes a trip better when you catch fish, right? And the salmon, I have to tell you, I'm still eating the salmon. They are just delicious. They are really just a mild, beautiful fish. So I love to fish, and I fished Lake Ontario before, but it was a great fishing trip. And then it did help kick off a tourism initiative that we're announcing, because short term, while we're dealing with elevated lake levels and the IJC, et cetera, and a economic development initiative we're doing and a resiliency initiative, I just wanted to make sure that people know in the meantime, the lake is there. The lake is beautiful. It is open for business. The hotels, the charters, the waterside attractions are open for business. We started an I Love New York advertising campaign targeting Lake Ontario, and we're running ads on just the Lake Ontario region that are running throughout the country in the Northeast. We also did a special initiative where you don't need a fishing license on Lake Ontario through Labor Day. And all the state parks and campsites have reduced fees all along the lake, which obviously is the whole northern border of our beautiful state. So all of this to help promote tourism in the meantime, because people hear flooding or elevated levels and they think that maybe that interferes with the enjoyment of the lake from a tourism point of view, and they're wrong. And by the way, it happens to be a phenomenal fishing season.
It is. I was on the St. Lawrence River a few weekends ago, and I noticed that there were fewer people there than have been in past years, maybe due to the lake levels. But I'm glad that this tourism effort is, you're doing this enhanced tourism effort. We can post more information about that on our website, the free fishing licenses, reduced park and camping fees. But I know, Governor, you have some news to share regarding the Ready Commission.
Yes. The Ready Commission, for those who don't know, is the resiliency and economic development initiative. We've never done this before. And the background is important. 2017, just 2 years ago, we had elevated flood levels and they were the highest ever. And at that time, everyone said, well, this is once in 500 years and this will never happen again. And many homes were damaged. And I went to the state legislature and we had an appropriation of $100 million. That we spent to repair the damage to the homes, et cetera, 2 years ago. And now 2 years later, we're right back where we were in 2017. And I've been jousting with the International Commission that's supposed to regulate the water level, because my point is very simple. I represent New York, and they're supposed to regulate the water level, and they're not, and it's not working. But also, I think we've all come to the conclusion that this is not once in 500 years. And if it happened in 2 years, it'll probably happen again. So rather than spending all this money doing emergency repairs, why don't we just adjust to a new reality and say, let's do the work that we need to do, but let's anticipate higher lake levels going forward. And that's the resiliency part. If we have to make repairs, let's make the repairs assuming the elevated levels, so that if there is another flood level in 1 year, 2 years, 5 years, it's not a problem because we've built to it. And while we're doing the resiliency, let's do it with an eye towards economic development. And the waterfront there is beautiful. It's a magnificent attraction. How do we do more economic development, more access to the waterfront, and more business for the community? So it puts those two concepts together, resiliency and economic development. And the state pledged $300 million, which is an unheard of single investment in upstate New York. I don't think there has been as large an investment in this type of activity in upstate New York, probably in the history of the state of New York. So I'm proud of it, and it's necessary. We then went to the local communities and said, we want you to tell us what you need to do. I don't want a lot of bureaucrats in Albany deciding what should be done in Oswego or Monroe. Let Monroe tell us what should be done. So it's an initiative driven by the local communities. And they're going through a planning process where they're deciding what their priority projects are. They're going to submit them to the state. The state will pick the best ones, and we will fund them. But what we've been learning in these planning sessions from the local communities have given us a twofold adjustment. The residential homes that are subject to flooding need help. And what we're asking local governments to do is they will be eligible projects for these grants, but the local community has to work with the residential communities to put together a critical mass of homes where we can actually put in a physical barrier that will work. In other words, you can't put a break wall in front of one or two or three homes. You can't put in sand dunes in front of one or two or three homes because the water just literally goes around the neighbor's properties and comes around the back of the whatever barrier you build. So the local governments would have to find a number of homes and a geographic configuration where some type of barrier would actually work. I mentioned break walls and sand dunes because they're the most common usage. But that will be an eligible activity. And we also have a number of homeowners themselves who have experienced damage and need assistance. And in 2017, we ran a single home damage program. We'll take $20 million from the $300 million, set it aside to do single residences that have incurred damage from the flooding. So single-family residences would also be eligible, again, applying through the local government. I don't want the state government making decisions. I want the local governments making decisions.
Well, Governor, let's talk about that $20 million for the individual assistance for homeowners. How will you prioritize which homeowners are eligible for that funding? How can a family demonstrate their need?
All of this runs through the local government. Your local town, your local village, your local city. That local government entity is part of a regional planning process, and they make the decisions as to what the priorities are. Whenever I get the chance, I try to defer to the local governments because they just know the needs better. So a single homeowner, a single family homeowner could go to their local town, say, this is the situation, this is what happened, this is the damage. That local town then would bring that project forward.
I'm wondering if our listeners may have this question. If so many people are affected by the lake level damage, is $20 million enough? Do you think this will cover homeowners, small businesses, this individual assistance? Or do you think you'll have to seek funding from elsewhere, maybe the federal government, maybe municipalities? Is it enough? And if not, where will the rest of the funding come from?
Well, the primary funding comes from the federal government, right? FEMA, Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, the federal government, is primarily responsible for what they call disaster relief. And FEMA funding, for example, in 2017, 2 years ago when we had the floods, it's primarily the federal responsibility. What we found was the federal government, frankly, was not all that responsive. They did provide funding, but the funding did not cover the amount of damage. So in 2017, we spent $100 million from state funds on top of the federal funds. In 2017, we did do emergency repairs, and we did do some home emergency repairs that we could call resiliency repairs, right? Where homeowners did increase the size of the wall in front of their homes, et cetera. They did rebuild higher. Many people raised their homes. So I do believe the damage this year is less than it was in 2017 to residential homes. And that's all the information that we've gotten. But the $20 million in this allocation, again, is on top of what the federal government would allocate. And again, this is primarily a federal responsibility. I was in the federal government during the Clinton administration for 8 years. I ran a federal department called Housing and Urban Development, and I worked a lot with FEMA on disasters. We worked on disasters all across the country, even in other countries. But it is a federal responsibility, one of the few. So this is in addition to whatever the federal government would do.
With this new announcement, Governor, will the Ready Commission extend their deadline for project proposals? We're receiving some information that the submission process ended August 1st. So is this only for proposals that have already been submitted, or will the process reopen for homeowners who perhaps have not submitted yet and are interested?
Well, they have several more weeks that they can provide an application. If people need more time, we could do an extension. I haven't heard that, but and on a single-family home, it's fairly obvious what damage you've incurred. And reaching out to your local government is not all that onerous. But if people need an extension, that is something we could do. The second, quote-unquote, residential component, if you will, if you have, and this, again, is for the local governments, but if I'm a local mayor, if you know there is a stretch of property, and there are, I've been all over the lake, obviously, and all across the shorefront. If there is a piece of geography where there are 20 or 30 homes, and those homes are in a location that tend to get hit by the higher water, and they want to submit a proposal to say, we would like to place a break wall or a sand dune, which is many people find more attractive than looking at a break wall, a dune in front of these homes, and the homes agree, that can be another project that we would consider. But when I talk about critical mass, you see some homeowners who will build something in front of just their house, right? If you take a ride in a boat and you're looking, Megan, you'll see some homes build a break wall in front of their home. That basically doesn't accomplish anything because the water comes on the neighbor's property and just fills in behind the break wall that was built, right? So you literally need a physical configuration that winds up being effective.
Mm-hmm. Governor Cuomo,
does
I want
to... Does that make sense to you? Am I explaining it correctly?
It does. You're looking at a more... You're looking at a more collaborative approach to handling the resiliency projects. So I understand what you're saying. And I think... I know we're down to our last few minutes. I want to respect your time, Governor. And you mentioned earlier...
No, I'm not going anywhere.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm glad to have you for as long as you're available. You mentioned earlier that these flooding issues are not once in every 5 years anymore. This is a new reality. So if this is a new normal, why are you still calling on the IJC to change lake level management? Do you think these high levels are from climate change? Are they caused by Plan 2014? Where do you stand on that issue?
All of the above. I think Plan 2014 does not work. And you know what? These are changing circumstances. I get it. And I get the IJC saying it's climate change and increased snow and more rapidly melting snow. But it is also the balance between commercial shipping and summer recreation use. And it is also the balance among different geographic areas. And I don't believe Plan 2014 is working. And I do believe they can do a better job. So I'm not waiting for them to do a better job. We're going forward. But at the same time, I'm not going to let them off the hook. And I do think they're exacerbating the situation. And I understand they have to balance Canada and commercial shipping and different interests. I represent the people of the state of New York. They sign my check. And that's who I represent, and that's who I'm going to fight for.
We'll post all this information about the updates, this breaking news on our website, listeners. And Governor, while I have a few more minutes with you, I do want to ask a few different questions, one related to the events of this past weekend. When you were on the program a few weeks ago, Evan Dawson asked you if you were willing to go further than you have on gun laws in the past. And we referenced an interview with Grand Island Supervisor Nate McMurray, who told us that it's time for Democrats to call for the ban and confiscation of assault-style weapons. And you were not in favor of that. Have the events in El Paso or Dayton changed your perspective on that issue at all?
Let's be specific so we're clear. We have banned assault weapons in the state of New York. 6 years ago, after the Sandy Hook massacre, where we all saw school children killed, we passed the best gun safety law in the United States of America. And it bans assault weapons. It bans high-capacity magazines. It calls for universal background checks and a mental health database. Just to show you what it's accomplished, we now have 100,000 seriously mentally ill people on the mental health database that could have bought a gun in New York, Megan, who can't now buy a gun because we have a mental health database. And we did ban assault weapons. Why? Because an assault weapon, the risk outweighs the reward. They are designed to kill. I am not anti-gun. I own a gun. Hunting is a great tradition. Passing on a gun to a child is a great tradition. But an assault weapon, which is what was used in El Paso, it's what was used in Ohio, they are designed to kill the largest number of people in the shortest period of time. So we did that 6 years ago. And I, as a matter of fact, today I'm calling on all the Democratic presidential candidates to adopt our law, in essence. And I'm saying to them, if they want the votes of New Yorkers, when they come to New York, I'm going to ask them straight out, do you support our laws? I call it the Safe America Pledge. We've had it for 6 years. It works. There's no legitimate gun owner who has come to me in 6 years and said, you infringed on my right. Seriously mentally ill people can't buy guns, and former felons don't have guns. And that's why you need a background check so you know who's buying the gun. But no legal, legitimate owner has complained to me that their rights have been infringed. And I'm going to ask every presidential candidate, you want to show the difference between the Democrats and the Republicans? Agree to this law, because I'll tell you the truth, I can't even tell you what the position of the Democratic presidential candidates are. And I follow this stuff every day. And if you're just leading your life, I don't know who could tell what the Democrats believe and stand for among the group. So I'm doing that. Confiscation is different. We have 6 years ago banned the sale of assault weapons and regulated what you could do if you owned an assault weapon. Confiscation is the piece that we did not do. And I don't even know how you would do that. And what is the need to do it if they are already banned 6 years ago?
Well, Governor, I know that you need to get to another interview, and I want to thank you so much for joining us today. We have more questions for you, so you are always welcome on this program whenever you'd like. But thank you so much for joining us today, for sharing that news, and we'll have all of that information on our website. We appreciate it.
Invite me to go fishing. Can we do the show from the back of a boat?
I would go. I'm a bass fisher, so I would definitely join you.
Okay.
Governor Cuomo, thank you so much.
Megan.
You too. Well, listeners, we'll take our only break of the hour, and when we come back, we'll talk to WXXI reporter and producer Veronica Volk, who has been covering the Great Lakes for a number of years. She'll break down her thoughts on this news. We'll also be joined by WXXI News Director Randy Gordman and also our Capitol Bureau correspondent Karen DeWitt. So stay with us. More Lake Level News, more connections next. Coming up in our second hour, a conversation with candidates for Rochester City Council. Earlier this summer, we talked to candidates running on the Democratic Party line, and this hour we hear from Green Party candidates and the Republican Party candidate. They share their platforms, their priorities for their districts, and we'll talk to them about a range of issues affecting Rochester: poverty, Parcel 5, police accountability, and more. That's next. You're listening to Connections. I'm Megan Mack, sitting in for Evan Dawson today. You just heard Governor Andrew Cuomo breaking some news on this program. Regionally significant efforts has been the focus of the Ready Commission, but he broke today that a number of homeowners still in need of individual assistance in lakeside communities will receive that assistance, many of them. $20 million earmarked out of the $300 million for an expansion of the Department of Housing and Community Renewal Residential Home Repair Program. He talked a little bit about how those projects would be prioritized. I know my colleague Veronica Volk, who has been covering the Great Lakes for many years, has some thoughts on that. Veronica, thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Megan.
What's your takeaway from the governor's breaking news?
Well, I thought it was interesting. I mean, this announcement answers one of the biggest questions that have come out of the meetings of the Ready Commission, which is this money going towards municipality-driven projects, or is it going to homeowners? And the answer is both, obviously. We see a small chunk, this $20 million out of the $300 million allocated to homeowners. The big question is, are these projects going to be more about disaster mitigation and relief from the flooding that we saw in 2017 and 2019, or will this be about bigger picture resiliency projects? You heard Cuomo talk a lot about entire neighborhoods of people getting together and proposing hardened shorelines and breakwalls of that sort in order to kind of increase the resiliency of entire neighborhoods rather than just one home at a time. And we'll see whether or not people who have gotten individual damages from these lakes will see any sort of benefit.
Randy Gorman is also joining us in studio. He's our news director here at WXXI. Randy, what were your takeaways from the governor's news?
He really is, and obviously he has to talk to come on. We're glad to have him today on the talk show, but second time, I think, in recent weeks that he's come on to talk about issues involving the lake. And it's just kind of interesting that he feels a need to make sure that people know that the state is involved in these resiliency projects. Veronica obviously has reported extensively on this, but as Veronica mentioned, I mean, there's been a big question about individual homeowners. And Veronica, like you said, I mean, I'm just kind of curious about, you know, the governor's been harping on this, you know, resiliency effort, but as you said, I'm really curious about whether or not if someone has already had damage, can any of this money be used for previously existing damage? It didn't sound like that to me, but I'm not sure.
No, I'm not sure either. And I honestly don't think it's a surprise that he's come on twice to talk about lake issues. We know from a story that our Morning Edition host put out, Beth Adams, put out last week, that there was a study that came out of RIT that says regardless of political affiliation, most people believe that Plan 2014 has been largely responsible for the damage incurred from high lake levels. That means that when Cuomo comes on WXXI's Connections to talk to lake levels, to talk about resiliency plans, and to talk about the IJC, he's speaking to a broad constituency of people that believe in that.
And go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, go ahead, Randy.
No, I was going to say WXXI Albany correspondent Karen
DeWitt. Yes, Karen DeWitt's on the line.
Is on the line. And Karen, you know, we were just talking off the air, and I'll ask you because you're the person that's been covering Albany for so long. And you know, of course, the governor's been on some of the national programs today, including CNN, talking about the pledge that you heard at the end of the segment we had with him about looking for more gun control efforts from Democratic presidential candidates, how they stand on those. Karen, how much of this do you think is at all, or does it have any connection at all to a Siena poll, which wasn't overly positive for him yesterday? Do you think he decided to come on all these talk shows today, including ours, to kind of get the word out about what he is doing, or just kind of coincidence there?
Well, you know, I don't think he's happy about that poll that showed the lowest ever job approval ratings for him. But actually, I think that it is more of a coincidence this time. You know, look, the gun control issues are really big for the governor. When he passed the SAFE Act in 2013, he became very unpopular, especially in many, many pockets of upstate. And I think he decided, well, you know what, I lost political capital on this, but so I'm just going to make it my issue and go for it. And, you know, just keep speaking up about it because, you know, I've already lost on this, so I got nothing to lose. Plus, it just seems like something that he is, you know, he does seem legitimately passionate about. I think what's interesting is Cuomo is not running for president. Remember back when some people, I'm not saying it was me, thought that he might run for president? He certainly was setting himself up in that way. And obviously he's not one of those 20 candidates, but he's definitely trying to make his mark on the national stage. He's become active in the National Governors Association. He got the number two job, whatever that title is, vice president or whatever. And now he's really trying to influence the Democratic presidential races by coming out with this kind of, you know, manifesto that he wants them to sign on to, as he just mentioned on the show, of, you know, adopting a lot of things that New York has adopted about the assault weapons ban and the high-capacity magazines, the mental health database, which New York already has, universal background checks, closing that private gun sales loophole, and then the so-called red flag legislation that prevents individual, well, you have to go to court first, but the guns can be taken away from someone who might pose a risk to themselves or others by using a firearm. So he's putting that out there and trying to influence, you know, what the Democratic candidates are going to do. So I think that that's another motivation for him to be on numerous shows today.
One question I wanted to ask the governor, Karen, and didn't have a chance to, is yesterday on this program, we were talking about some of New York State's new gun control laws, and Undersheriff Corey Brown mentioned that he would like to see, personally, he's not speaking for the sheriff's office, but he personally would like to see a firearms training course for anyone who has purchased a gun. Do you think that's something that's likely to happen in New York State? Would Governor Cuomo be in favor of something like that?
I obviously can't speak for the governor, but, you know, it does seem like that would make a lot of sense to someone who's, you know, I'm not a gun owner, but if I did want to purchase a gun, I would certainly want some training. It's kind of like when you drive a car, you've got to learn how to drive a car. So So yeah, I don't know if that would really help with, you know, the problem of mass shootings, but that would certainly be a safety feature that people would understand more, you know, the proper care and how to use their guns.
Karen, this issue with the Ready Commission and the flooding along Lake Ontario, obviously it resonates a lot for those of us here in Western and Central New York and the Finger Lakes, but do you think it has you know, much traction politically with other constituents across upstate, or is it pretty much just a very localized issue?
Well, I think it seems pretty localized because it's people who live along the lake. I think what probably annoys Governor Cuomo about this whole thing is the IJC, the International Commission. He doesn't have a lot of sway with them, and you know, he does like to be in control of policy issues, and it just seems that that has been annoying him, that they are not taking into consideration New York State's needs. But you know, it's part of the larger picture of climate change, global warming, things, you know, a lot of different things with, you know, lake levels rising. In this case, it's more artificially done, is my understanding. But, yeah, there's just a lot of this stuff going on, and the governor has, you know, jumped in on a lot of these issues. And plus, as he says, he likes to fish, so.
Oh, yeah, we're going fishing, if any of you want to come with us.
Yeah, that's an interesting adventure for you.
Listeners, if you'd like to join this conversation, you can call the program at 844-295-TALK. That's 844-295-8255. Or if you're in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. You can email the program at connections@WXXI.org. And you can find me on Twitter at MMacMedia. Veronica, I'd like to turn back to you because I'm wondering, what kind of feedback do you think homeowners will have after hearing this news? Will they have more questions than... Are they rejoicing? Are they glad? Or do you think they'll have more questions and concerns? $20 million.
It'll be interesting to see. I mean, the next meeting for the Governor's Ready Commission will be this month, and I'll be in attendance. I did see a couple proposals for individual homes the last meeting that I attended. And as the governor said, I think he maybe said that vaguely that they'd be willing to extend deadlines for proposals, but I'm not sure how that will actually work in practice, because as far as I know, the deadline was on August 1st for proposal submission. So I'm not sure if this is going to be looking at proposals that have already been handed in, or if they're going to kind of extend that deadline. One of the things that I'm really interested in seeing as this plays out is how this will give the green light to certain infrastructure projects across Western New York that have been maybe in the works for some time. Municipalities are looking at ways of updating their sewer systems as a way to combat some of the high lake levels and at least some of the flooding that goes along with it. And this isn't just a Western New York problem, of course. This is happening all over New York. We saw some dramatic flash flooding just in New York City within the last couple of weeks. And it's interesting to see how this Ready Commission is an opportunity for our communities to sort of find ways to update their infrastructure problems that have maybe been in existence for decades.
Mm-hmm. There's a question from a listener named Jerry that I'll read. I'm not sure if it's one our panel can answer. Perhaps Veronica can speak to it with the reporting that she's done. But Jerry says, lakefront water property has high value. People pay extra to live there. Waterfront property is well known to have its pros and cons, advantages, and a few disadvantages. People who buy there assume the risk of disadvantages. Why should the rest of the taxpaying community be burdened with helping out the few who have assumed the risk of a high-value property when there is a downside problem at that property? Will or should taxpayers then be responsible for problems at everyone else's property that is not waterfront? Is that a fair question, Veronica?
I think it's a question that a lot of people around the state have been asking when it comes to funding these projects, specifically disaster mitigation projects. But also, if you look at disaster mitigation on a nationwide level, you have natural disasters happening across this country in response to climate change. You have wildfires, flash flooding, extreme weather events, even just rain, hail, and flash flooding can cause immense amounts of damage. And I think that people who live on the lakefront would say that it's unfair that living on the lake assumes a negative effect. People who live there would say that we've had so many lake levels for so many years, we built our property to these specifications, and we were kind of lulled into a false sense of security that our properties would be safe. Now, whether or not that's the truth is kind of, or whether or not that's relevant at this point is up for debate, apparently. So,
I think it's just going to be an issue. I was just going to say, I think it's going to be an issue that's really going to, you know, continue and get bigger. According to climate scientists, we're going to see a lot more of different water levels rising, you know, the fires, the floods, and that is the bigger question. How do we take care of you know, all the homeowners. It's really a disruptive force in society, and it's probably only the beginning of this. And, you know, maybe if you're not affected now because you don't live on the lake, something else could happen, you know, even though you live in a place that for, you know, many, you know, decades has been a fine place to live and, you know, doesn't flood, nothing could, you know, the woods don't catch on fire, but, you know, what people are seeing that, you know, really change.
And I think this is also going to be an interesting model going forward for other parts of the state. I mean, right now the Ready Commission is very much focused on lake levels along the southern shore of Lake Ontario. But if you look at the Finger Lakes that are constantly disrupted by harmful algal blooms as a result of warming temperatures, more runoff due to extreme precipitation, if you look at downstate and the way that flash flooding is affecting those communities, I mean, like, if you think about it, some of the resiliency and economic development initiative could be expanded throughout the state in response to climate change, as Karen said.
How much is the Ready Commission covering when it comes to the St. Lawrence River? As I mentioned, I was there a few weeks ago and saw a lot of damage, boat garages in the water, docks flooded. How much of these proposals come from the St. Lawrence, or is that not an issue? It's only Lake Ontario.
Well, my specific reporting has been on this in Monroe County, so I'm not completely sure. I do know that it's referred to as the Lake Ontario Resiliency and Economic Development Initiative, but I'm not sure that that means that these projects stop at the St. Lawrence Dam. So I'll surely check into that for you guys.
From the, I was going to ask you, Veronica, from the meetings you've gone to so far with the Ready Commission and what you heard today about, you know, another $20 million for homeowners and for various kinds of projects, what's the reaction been of the town officials so far? Do you think they've been pretty positive about the state's effort here? Or
I think for some of the local representatives that we have whose communities have been dramatically affected, they have sort of a cautious optimism. A lot of them aren't politically aligned with the governor and don't have a whole lot of faith in the state's ability to address some of these problems. But I think that because this comes with a very specific grant fund, you know, $300 million, a very specific amount of money. So I think that there's the idea that at least some of these projects have to get funded, right? So why not it be ours? Why not we put together the best proposal?
Have you seen any of those proposals? Do you know what kinds of projects are on the table?
I haven't. I've seen brief descriptions. Like I said, there's a lot of talk of updating sewer systems, particularly in the villages of Sodus, Parma, Hamlin, a lot of communities that were greatly affected. There's hardening shorelines along Edgemere Drive, a lot of just big infrastructure projects. But of course, you also have projects that address small businesses. I've been talking to people at Mayor's Marina about some of the ways that they've tried to make their proposal strong and try to demonstrate their value to the community. This is a small business. It's been owned by a family for over half a century, and they might seem like not a huge priority to a state agency like the Ready Commission. But to people in Webster and Irondequoit who want to get their gas to gas up their boat or want to launch their boat for free, maybe they can demonstrate that value. So I'm interested to see how the prioritization process goes.
I'm sure you'll keep following that, Veronica. So we can have an update on the show about how all that works. I see the phone starting to ring. First up on the phone is Jane in Rochester. Go ahead, Jane.
Yes, Megan. I had a problem of stalking back in the 80s, and so I started thinking about a gun, and there was a course offered by the police department designed for women, and I suppose anybody could come, but it was primarily for women, and they were wonderful. They were so thorough, and the thing that I went away with primarily was the extreme respect that they had for the weapon, and that was transmitted to all of us, those that didn't have it quite so much. But, you know, a gun is not a toy. But they went through everything, how to purchase a weapon and the ammo and how to store it, how to clean it, how to stand when you're shooting, how to squeeze the trigger, and, you know, the safety, the safe storage so that you're 10-year-old doesn't find it, mm-hmm. and so that it's not stolen. But I was just really impressed with them, and it was a very positive experience. I chose not to, at that time, purchase a gun, and I still don't own one, but like someone on your panel said, it's a good idea sometimes to know. You know, it might be that you have to use someone else's gun in an emergency, and you do not have training. You don't know what you're doing. But it would be wonderful if we could have something like that. They even said something about refresher courses at times to remind you of the safety, of the way to safely use a gun and the situations you might choose not to use it and how limited it can be. You know, far better to reach for 911 if you can, you know, if you can do that, than to use the gun and not to think of the gun as the first thing. But I just wanted to state how impressed I was with the training that we got. And that's all I have to say. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jane. Thanks for calling. We did talk about the safe storage bill on the program yesterday, as well as the measure that the governor signed to ban the manufacture, sale, and possession of 3D printed guns. Karen, in Albany, what, is there any buzz about that? I asked the undersheriff yesterday if he's seen any 3D printed guns in Monroe County. He said he did not have much experience with that.
Yeah, that one I don't really know about either, if it's very prevalent. It sounds like something you don't really want to become prevalent, so maybe that's proactive. But, yeah, we haven't heard as much buzz other than trying to outlaw it, and also with the safe storage. And the caller, that was, you know, all really good advice about if you have a gun, you know, to respect it and not think it's the first thing that you should use, and, you know, to just, you know, make sure it's safely stored, and to just, you know, treat it with some respect.
Mm-hmm. Randy, I'm not sure if you heard the governor's response to the mass shootings, and did you hear that?
I heard some on our show as well as some other programs this morning. I guess it's CNN, some other radio shows downstate as well.
Do you think he's being careful in his responses to that? Is he sidestepping some issues, or were you satisfied?
I know
with
you talked about, and obviously you get into constitutional other issues about the confiscation of guns, which he didn't want to get into. I think it was pretty much kind of just bringing back. I think he's still a bit on the defensive side since the SAFE Act was passed several years ago and still trying to say that New York is doing more than other states. I don't know if I heard him sidestepping, but I think he's still somewhat careful in his language. But like you mentioned earlier, and actually Karen mentioned previously, I think he's just trying to really position himself as somebody who can kind of drive the conversation on gun control to some extent. And he sort of has, rightfully or wrongfully, obviously this has been a very big upstate, downstate, Republican-Democrat issue, very, very divided issue in New York State for several years. But he doesn't show any signs of backing down from that. But I also don't know that I see anything particularly new. Karen, tell me if you heard anything new today or read anything new. I think he's pretty much just been talking about what New York State has put in place up to now. I didn't hear about any new legislation that he would propose.
Well, I think he's trying to make the point that this happened in New York State. And, yeah, it's true. There are some people, especially in upstate New York, that are pretty bitter about the SAFE Act to this day. But as he points out, nobody's gun has been taken away, and it hasn't had the negative repercussions day to day that some gun owners feared. So I think he's trying to make the point that, you know, this happened in New York, and you know, it hasn't been as terrible, and it hasn't, in his view, it hasn't infringed on Second Amendment rights. I will say that the one thing that you never hear him say, and maybe he doesn't want to tempt fate, is that New York is safer because of these laws. He never draws that connection. We haven't, you know, thank God, had any of these mass shootings. But I have noted in all the times that he's talked, he doesn't go that far as to make, you know, that connection, just saying that, you know, we have these laws.
Going back to the lake levels, Veronica, I know you're looking into the algal bloom issue, and you're doing some reporting on that. Is there anything that you can share with us now so our listeners have an idea of what's going on either in Lake Ontario or the Finger Lakes?
Yeah, well, sure. We recently received a report that said that the harmful algal bloom in Lake Erie was going to be, I believe it's a level 7 out of 9. I'll have to double check that for our listeners. But it's anticipated to be pretty extreme. And we know that harmful algal blooms are brought on by extreme precipitation, usually wet springs, followed by long bouts of hot weather. It just creates like this perfect environment for algae to live. And one of the reasons that people are looking at this, not just because it creates a kind of a hostile environment for the wildlife and maybe even pets that might swim in the lake, is because a lot of communities get their water from local lakes. So if you have a community that's getting its water from a lake that is that has harmful algal blooms, what they're essentially doing is potentially bringing toxins into the water system. So it becomes a health issue, a public health issue. So people are studying these, trying to figure out what causes them, what makes them worse, and how we can potentially mitigate them. But for right now, the best that science can do is identify them, identify how toxic they're going to be, and try to implement, short-term and some long-term efforts to try to at least slow them down, if not eliminate them.
How bad is the problem in Lake Ontario?
Lake Ontario doesn't have a huge problem. It's a deep lake. It's a big lake. There are often algae blooms along the lake shore that you might see if you go up to the beach, for instance. But that's different from harmful algal blooms, which is actually a cyanobacteria that releases a neurotoxin. But of course, they test for that kind of stuff at our local beaches all the time.
I'm glad we sent her to school for this stuff because I start to get lost at a certain
Not even. I was a communications major.
And I would add that, to the points that Veronica's making, a lot of money is going to need to be invested in infrastructure in the coming years. You mentioned sewer systems. They seem really boring, but they're actually really important. And a lot of them are very, very old around the state and the country. Need for better water filtration as you have, more of these, unusual kinds of, plants in the water systems. And that's something that really isn't being addressed. I know when President Trump came in, he said infrastructure was going to be a big issue. And of course, it really hasn't happened with all the gridlock in the federal government. But that's something that is probably going to cost a lot of money and a lot of taxpayer money in the future to just kind of live with, all these changes that are happening to our environment.
Yeah, that's right. And Karen, just to piggyback off of what you said, it's funny that you mentioned that because when I walked into the first Ready Commission meeting, I had kind of this idea in my head that they were going to prioritize big picture projects. We were talking, let's put houses on hydraulic lifts or let's do something really big and sexy. And as it turns out, that a lot of the projects that would be most beneficial to these communities are the quote unquote boring projects like updating sewer systems. So.
And I know one of the questions that you had for the governor, Veronica, that we didn't have time to ask was many of the projects in Monroe County have been municipality driven, like hardening shorelines, updating sewer systems. Why did it take a disaster to finally fund these projects? What are residential homeowners saying about this? Are they frustrated with the city? Are they frustrated with the county? Or is most of their frustration delivered toward the state?
I would say the people I talked to, I don't want to generalize and say the entire lakeshore, but the people I've talked to have said, we've lived on the lake for X amount of years. We knew this was coming with Plan 2014. And we talked loudly about how this shouldn't happen and why didn't anyone listen to us before they made any changes? And two, why didn't anyone do anything preventative in terms of creating a more resilient shoreline before the implementation of Plan 2014? And I've spoken with people who are involved in the planning process that have also kind of had that question. Why didn't Governor Cuomo step out before these floods to say, we're going to have to take some steps to harden our shoreline or to at least make it more resilient? I mean, the effects of climate change have not been a secret for, many years now. So it's interesting to see after 2017 and 2019, the implementation of this Ready Commission. Some people are saying this is too late, but regardless, it's happening now. So let's see how it goes.
Mm-hmm. We're down to our last few minutes, and I want to turn back to News Director Randy Gorbman, who I know follows all of Governor Cuomo's news conferences, press releases. You get dozens and dozens.
That's Karen DeWitt who does all
and,
that.
And Karen DeWitt's doing all the actual work,
yeah.
But I'm contractually obligated to say that it's Randy Gorbman.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
But so my question is for both of you, what's the next big thing on the horizon for Governor Cuomo, whether it's political or not? What do you think
I'm going to defer to Karen. You're close to the ground there, Karen.
Well, he has said that he wants to seek a fourth term. It's not for 3 years. And we started talking about the poll numbers, mentioning that, I was speculating with the pollster Steve Greenberg yesterday, is there a bit of, Cuomo fatigue setting in? He's been in 9 years and the news cycles are so rapid now. I think that that's something that he's got to kind of, fight against. And as you said, we've seen him, everywhere trying to, say, I'm making a difference. I'm trying to do something about flooding. I'm talking about gun control. This is usually like a quiet time because it's an off election year for statewide elections. But, there just isn't quiet time anymore. It's almost like, I think that a lot that's happened during this governor's term is, back to the natural disasters. He's buffeted a lot by natural disasters, too, hurricanes, floods, and all of that. So I don't know. I mean, he really seems to want to remain governor, influence the 2020 presidential debate. And I would point out, even if he doesn't want to run a fourth term for governor, he has to say that, or then he becomes a lame duck, you know, 1 year into his third term. But, you know, third terms are always difficult for governors, and they struggle a little bit, although so far I think with the Democratic-led state legislature and all the things that they did during the session, all the progressive issues, he's been able to, you know, write all of that and, you know, stay pretty popular with that.
Mm-hmm. Like you mentioned, Karen, he's been on many talk shows lately. This is the third time he's been on our program in the last, I want to say, month and a half, maybe, Randy.
And we hadn't had him on before that mm-hmm. for
Well,
some
I'm
time.
Glad he's finally discovered a great talk show to be on.
Well, I wanted to ask you, Karen, how is your relationship with him? Because I know there was an incident a while back. You asked him a question. He was not pleased about it. Has that improved?
Well, he was in a bad mood that day, and he was actually not very nice to all of the reporters that day, but it just came out because it was the beginning of the Me Too movement, and it seemed like he was not being very nice to a woman. I don't know. I've known the governor a long time, and I know that, you know, he can be difficult at times, but, you know, you got to take it with a grain of salt, really, I would say.
And he is accessible. He has been surprisingly accessible lately, which is good for us at WXXI. So we will continue those conversations. I'd like to thank Veronica Volk, Randy Gorman, and Karen DeWitt for joining me to fill out the hour this hour. Great conversation. Thanks to all of you.
Thank you, Megan.
Thank you.
Thank
More
you.
Connections next. We're talking to candidates for Rochester City Council, those running on the Green Party and Republican lines, and you can ask them your questions. We'll be back shortly.